like the E on the beat.
Oi, this one na sara sara. The beat is tana tana. You go make you manya manya. Ines is in manya manya. Oh yeah, make you ricotta ricotta mama Africa ricotta eh. Make you dance yeah, 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 yeah. Everybody ricotta ricotta mama Africa ricotta eh. Make you dance yeah, 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 yeah. This one na sara sara. The beat is tana tana. You go make you manya manya. Ines is in manya manya. This is for people with chalacha. People with kalaka. Nandi walanya, nandi kalanya. It gon' make you feel better. This can take away palaba. This can take away wahala. It gon' make you feel Naija. Oh yeah, let's go to Kenya, Rwanda and Tanzania. Don't go Cameroon, Niger, Ghana, South and Sudan. Oh yeah, make you ricotta, ricotta, mama Africa, ricotta, eh. Make you dance, yeah, 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 yeah. Everybody ricotta, ricotta, mama Africa, ricotta, eh. Make you dance, yeah, 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 yeah. One sara sara le.
Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for this 43rd edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Noelle Lia, who was born in Sudan and raised in a refugee camp in Ethiopia from ages 1 to 7 years old. She has four sisters and brothers, and her family has lived in the U.S. since 2001, arriving in Maine after a short stint in Florida as a primary refugee. Noelle started the third grade here in Portland at Reike Elementary School, attended King Middle, Portland High, University of Maine at Machias before becoming a student of political science here at the University of Southern Maine. Welcome, Noelle.
Thank you.
So I wondered if we could start with your name. Could you tell us about your full name and who named you and what your name means?
Okay. So Noelle means medicine. A lot of people come up to me and think it's like a Christmas, you know, like the French Noelle. It's actually very interesting because if you actually read my name, it sounds like Nywell. And that's because, like, the first three letters, which are N-Y-A, and the first three letters mean girl. And in my tribe, I'm from South Sudan, as she mentioned. I'm from the Nuer tribe. And in the Nuer tribe, they're, all the girls in the Nuer tribes, all their names start with N-Y-A, just literally identifying that they're girls. So it's kind of interesting because my mom, my sister, my friends, everybody's name starts with N-Y-A if they're a girl.
That makes initials yeah. Not particularly useful.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
So then the second part of your name means medicine.
Yeah. So W-A-L. Wal means medicine. Like Wal and Nor means medicine.
And so your parents thought you would be good medicine for the community? Is that the kind of medicine?
I don't know. I would assume just because I was born in a hospital. Not too many people were born in the hospital.
Like, was there a reason you were born in the hospital?
Probably just because of the region we were in, but
were your other brother and sisters born in the hospital?
Not my older sisters, I wouldn't say. I don't know, but I don't think so. I mean, because they're older.
And so your name was given to you by your parents? Or
yeah, my parents. Yeah.
And are there other people in your tribe with this name?
Yeah. There's a girl named Noelle that's she's a model in Canada. I know of a Noelle from Nebraska. I don't know her personally, but I've seen her name on Facebook.
Yes. So your name doesn't look like Noelle written.
But no.
You gave up a long time ago. You just went with Noelle.
Yeah.
Probably a smart move.
Yeah. Sort of looks like Nywell, which is not it.
That's not it. You'd rather be Noelle.
Yeah.
So I wondered if you could give us a feel for what your world was like as a child, what your environment was like that you grew up in.
Well, as you mentioned, the first state that we moved to was Florida. We lived in Jacksonville, Florida for about like 6 months, I would say. And I'm pretty sure this sounds pretty typical, but I mean, I didn't know English, didn't know the country, didn't know the environment, didn't know anybody except for my family. And it was especially difficult in Jacksonville because there was no other immigrants. There were immigrants, but from like the Middle East. Or I know we had a couple. Well, I had like one friend in my neighborhood that was like from Ghana, and like that was it. That was the closest thing to like Africa. Although there was African Americans, obviously there's no relation in the way we communicate. So in the classroom when I was in like second grade, it was hard. Because not just because everybody looked different, but like nobody else was really experiencing the difficulties of not understanding the teacher. But things did get better when my family moved to Portland. And the reason we moved to Portland was because we had my uncle was here, and we had other people from the Sudanese community here. And as you mentioned, I went to Reiki, and Reiki was. It was a little easier because I think the way that a teacher teaches like is very different. Like I actually was studying elementary education for like the first year and a half, and it makes a difference when the teacher has learned to deal with people who don't know English, because there's a difference between teaching English and teaching kids who don't understand English, you know?
So the teachers at Reiki were more skilled with immigrants than
skilled,
in Florida.
Yeah, than in Florida, where they're, you know, in Florida, they just sort of handed me to them. And I'm sure they were as confused as I was confused, you know?
Yes.
So here, I remember my teacher very well. Her name was Miss Murphy, and like we had other Sudanese kids in my class. Nobody really spoke my language, but just seeing someone who looks like me made me feel more comfortable to even express myself. And I feel like I learned way faster around people that like looked like me or sounded like me. There was like two kids that spoke my language, but they were like they were older, and I was sort of shy when I first moved here, because it's like even all the newer kids from the community, I was shy to like even communicate with them when we would go to like to community parties or whatever, because it's like I'm over here so anxious to learn English, and like it's like they already know English, and I just feel like I'm like left behind. But it was more courage to learn English faster.
Encouragement, yeah. I think it takes a lot of work, and we forget that not only are kids growing up,
yeah,
but you know, and coming through those stages of development, but then you also throw learning a language in there. So you might have looked more shy than you actually were as a kid.
Yeah, but it was fun. I mean, I think it's way easier for younger kids to learn.
How long do you think it took you until you felt comfortable with English?
I remember like when we came here in 2001, like August 20 something, and I remember this like older man that lived right next to us, and it went from like August to whatever month we stayed in Florida, and he was just, I remember him being so surprised of like how fast I learned, because like kids just, they pick up easily. So like I probably didn't answer your question, but
but maybe 6 months, a year, you were,
yeah, 6 months. Six months is reasonable, yeah. Like, because you, yeah, like I remember the first words were "the" or "hi" or something like that, and then they just continue.
Do you have any advice that you would give people who are meeting immigrants or know that they have new immigrants that are resettling near them? What kinds of things that those families or those children might particularly need?
Just be patient and be respectful. I'm sure that sounds good, but I would say, from my experience, I used to volunteer at when I went to Portland High School as a senior, I would volunteer in the ESL classes. And I would just say, just remember that, like, just because they don't know English doesn't mean they don't know things. So I think just simple respect and calmness will go a long way.
Do you find our culture is a little more frenzied and uncalm, just as a norm?
Sometimes meet people who like sort of jump to conclusion, or like, I don't know. That was just my experience in that class. Mm-hmm. And it just like seemed like when people would help these kids in the ESL classes, I feel like they sometimes forgot that like they may know this math or whatever it is very well. It's just not in this language. So I don't know if there's like real great advice, but just
well, I think being respectful and moving in a calm way is probably pretty powerful advice.
Just look understanding or sound understanding. I don't know.
So when you came here, you came from a refugee camp, mm-hmm. right directly into Jacksonville, Florida.
Yeah. So I was born in South Sudan, and I've never seen South Sudan because as soon as I was born, we migrated over to Ethiopia. And at the refugee camp, and that's where I grew up.
Can you
so that's what I remember.
What your refugee camp looked like? You know, we hear refugee camp and maybe have some images associated, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, from my beautiful image that I hopefully one day could go back to and visit. I would just say like there was definitely no paved roads, just like dirt everywhere, and everybody basically built their own house, and houses looked like huts. I actually drew a picture when I was in seventh grade for like an art class. But basically all the houses are built out of huts. People have cattle. And it's honestly just like flat land. Like I don't think I saw mountains and all that until I went into the city to Gambela. Gambela is one of the major cities in Ethiopia. And then Addis is the capital in Ethiopia, which is like really beautiful and like civilized and everything. But where we lived, because it's a refugee camp, it wasn't really developed.
Were you able to farm at all?
Yeah. I mean, that's how people lived, aside from the United Nations coming in with rice and whatever they can come with. But yeah, people farm and people have cattle, and I mean that's the way of life actually in our culture, in the Dinka and the Nuer tribe. That's the way of life, cattle and farming.
Well, sustenance.
Yeah, and that's if we were to go into history, that was one of the main reasons why there was conflict between the North and the South, because at some point the North wanted to like tax the Nuer and the Dinka on their cattle. And no, they didn't like that because they're like, first of all, it's our land. Second of all, it's our cattle. So like, they didn't agree with it. So they kept fighting. That was just one of the reasons.
In the North and South Sudan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you help me understand more about tribal life in Sudan? There are more than 70 tribal groups in South Sudan.
64.
Just in South Sudan, right?
Yeah.
And is that part of what makes governing the people so difficult, to know that there's so many different belief systems and tribal traditions?
To be honest with you, because I grew up here, I can't really speak on that, but I can speak from my experience in Maine. I would imagine it's very difficult just because literally, okay, so there's more than 64 tribes in South Sudan. So that means languages, cultures, everybody actually looks a little different. When you look at the map of South Sudan, it's actually tremendous. Like, they're... It's like my friend is out there. Her name is Linda. And it's, like, where she's from, like, the... you would say the west South Sudan. And I'm, like, from east. But, yeah, our languages are similar. It's weird. Like, there's different cultures everywhere. So I think that's what makes it very difficult, because everybody grows up from a different background. And even within the tribes, there's clans, and then there's sub-clans, and like...
It's a lot to keep straight.
Sub-clans, yeah. And there's like, you know, family traditions that you have to follow. And so it's a lot. There's a lot of differences.
Were these tribal groups rather nomadic? Did they move around?
I don't want to answer that because I don't know. But me and Linda were going door to door yesterday doing community service to try to get parents involved. High school parents involved with an organization called CLIC. And we actually ran into like an elder from the Sudanese community. He was explaining to us actually for a good like 20-30 minutes that yeah, there was a lot of moving around, but that's just like what I heard from him, and it makes sense. Like he was explaining to us as he was showing us the map, so there was a lot of like traveling, because when war comes, you are either forced to move or you force the other person to move, and
that can set up a lot of conflict, right?
Yeah.
So you're listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. My guest today is Noelle Leah, originally from South Sudan. She's presently a student of political science here at the University of Southern Maine. So you have sung with a group called Pasintu.
Pasintu, yeah.
And I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about that experience and how it's affected you politically, if it's given you more of a voice.
Okay, yeah. So Pasintu, I joined Pasintu when I was in either 7th grade or 6th grade. And when I first started off, it was just an after-school program. And I went to it, actually.
It's a girls' international choir.
Multicultural, right? Multicultural. Yep. Portland girls, multicultural. It used to be mixed, but over the years it's been mostly girls. So, yeah, it's safe to call it girls. But, I've been in Pasintu all through high school and then through college. And then just last year, starting, like, the week of March 5th of 2014, something had happened in my family. And there was like a concert with Pasintu, I think like the next day or something. And my choir director actually asked me if I could speak on behalf of South Sudan. As many of you may or may not know, I'm actually on a different show called Speak Freely, and I speak about South Sudan a lot.
Here on WMPG.
Yeah, here on WMPG on Mondays. But basically, he gave me the opportunity to speak to the crowd that was watching us. The first crowd was in Waterville, Maine, in front of a church. And that was the first opportunity for me to speak in front of people outside of public speaking. It was only about like 60 or 70 people. But I would say that was the first time I got to like speak in front of people about something that I enjoyed. And after that, he gave me more opportunities. Like I spoke in front of I think it was like 500 or 600 people at some Holiday Inn, another place at West End. Like he would just give me like three or five minutes to speak about the current war in South Sudan.
I think he saw you as a natural leader and a good spokesperson.
Well, I don't know about a spokesperson, but I'm pretty sure he saw the passion. Like, because yeah, I'm very passionate about the topic of South Sudan. And since then, it's been helpful, I would say.
So this isn't the only thing you do organizing with. You mentioned CLIC, and last month there were two events organized to remember the people who lost their lives in mm-hmm. the Juba massacre mm-hmm. just 2 years ago in South Sudan. And I wondered if you could tell us how those events went, both a vigil and a prayer service, and what role you had in planning them.
So the vigil was on the 15th. We did it on the 15th. And it was at Monument Square. I would say I personally, I think I invested a lot of time in it, along as other people in my community, our chairman, my cousin Joshua Wang. I wrote a press release for the first time with the help of a professor here at USM. I'm not sure if the press release made it out, but it was a good experience. I did that. I made a page on Facebook. I talked to everyone I could. I would say that was the first event that I ever planned.
And it went pretty well. Training. Yeah.
Yeah, and it went pretty well.
How many people came to the vigil?
I don't know. I think like 50 or plus. And personally, I think it should have been more because the Sudanese community is way bigger.
It's about, what, 1,000 people
yeah.
in Southern Maine here?
But along with different beliefs in different tribes and
being December 15th
yeah
so it was cold.
Yeah, and it was cold. I personally feel like there should have been way more people, and I wasn't really too happy with it, but I was really happy with everyone who showed up, all my friends and all the supporters who just heard about it and showed up. It was really good.
Just putting a little context on it, in 2011, South Sudan became its own country,
mm-hmm.
and there were such high hopes from the Sudanese community here.
Yeah.
Like, wow, our whole...
Do you remember we marched from Monument Square to the expo? I remember that. And it was... That's what I'm comparing it to, because the vigil had about 50 or plus people, but the march had, like, hundreds of people.
There was hope.
So,
all the different tribes were excited.
Yeah, so yeah. It's kind of disappointing to see that we don't come together when there's sadness in our community. But
so then there was also a prayer service. Was there more attendance at that?
Yeah, there was more attendance at that. That had a lot more organizing to do with our chairman and other people in my community.
When you say you're chairman of what?
Oh, the Nuer community. We have a chairman for the Sudanese community as a whole. And then because in South Sudan, we have different tribes, different states, and different cities. So just like in America, you have your president, the governor, and then the mayor, so and so forth. So our chairman from the Nuer community, because the Juba massacre, as I've mentioned a lot, on that day, on the 20th, really the target was the Nuer people, and that's my tribe. And so, like, I would say that's why a lot of the organizing and all that stuff had to come from within the Nuer community here in Portland.
The Juba massacre involved people going door to door, slaughtering anyone who was Nuer. Is that correct?
Yep.
And that's horrifying to think of. And we're talking thousands and thousands, like
20,000.
20,000.
I mean,
people.
Not within that first day, but
they would just knock
the
on the door. People would come to the door and they
yeah,
would
yeah.
Them.
What happened on that day was there was a meeting. The president was having a meeting with the former vice president and other people, and there was a conflict that arose in the meeting, and the vice president and Rebecca Nyandang, the former first lady, they left because they had a conflict with the president. And as soon as they left, the president apparently felt like they were going to do something to him. So immediately he went on TV and, how do you say it? He basically told the people that it was he announced a state of emergency, and he told the people that you must stay in the house from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. And it's really horrifying to think that between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. that's when all the killing was happening. It's sad to say that's the truth, but it is. And I personally think my president is a dictator. I do not like him. I believe he should go to ICC, like, I don't know what's going on with him, but
so he's
not doing anything for the people, I would say.
Continues the struggle, and I think it's so interesting, and I wonder how it impacts you here. You know,
oh,
you had said your best friend is Dinka, and so this is a fight in South Sudan between the Dinka and the Nuer people, and so here you are, best friends. It's kind of a Romeo and Juliet kind of thing.
Yeah. The way it impacts me, like I said, at the prayer, I actually spoke on behalf of the youth in reaction. How did I react to this? And the way I react to it personally is just, please, like, I'm way too young for tribal anything. I believe in unity. I believe in the youth, and I feel that it's actually the youth duty. I mean, nobody's getting younger. These people that are in power right now, they're all going to die, to be honest. So it's not, we're going to die at some point. You know what I mean? So it's a younger generation's duty, I would say. And
what would you like to see the younger generation do more of in the future?
Come together and do reforms.
Come
come together, be active, speak to everyone you can speak to. I do this all the time. Every time I see younger kids, this is all I tell them. Tell your teachers, tell your friends, tell somebody, because awareness is everything. And even if you feel like you can't do nothing, I mean, me personally, I don't have no money to send back. I don't really know if I could really help financially, but I know that my voice, you just speak for the voiceless, because they're voiceless. They're all the way in South Sudan.
So don't just do nothing. Don't be a bystander.
Yeah, that's exactly what I always say. Do not be a bystander. And if you're going to be a bystander, you might as well be the opposer, I would say. Like, that's a little harsh, but with all the great opportunities we have here, I would just say speak freely.
Excellent. Use that First Amendment. And so, Noelle, what are your hopes for the future?
My hopes are to graduate here at USM and go into, I honestly don't even know, but political science, I enjoy it very much. I want to work with people, obviously, bring change into communities. My main goal is to go into to work in a remote area and bring resources. So human resources, I would say, in political science and public speaking and all that.
Resources and unity.
Yeah.
Great, great message. Noelle, you are so passionate about raising awareness and getting people to engage in making the world a better place. It's very impressive to experience some of your power, and I believe you're going to make a substantial impact on
Thank
the community.
You. Thank you.
And maybe even the world. Thank you for being willing to come on New Mainers Speak today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening. Please join us each Sunday from noon to 12:30 for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com or check out the show's Facebook page, Facebook/newmainerspeak. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Noelle Leah. You've been listening to New Mainers Speak. We will close today's program with a song that Noelle's picked out for us. Would you like to say a few words about this song that you chose?
Yeah, I chose a song called Nya Sunday. It's a love song by a guy named Dorp. Dorp, poor Dorp. It's just a love song.
Great.
In my language. That's
Thank
it.
You. I like the song you picked at the beginning, too.
Thank you. Cherum ngal ge chang ngal me te cha cha en pa yal ni lo kor nya so dan ke lu nyami wa ni nyam te na le re nya son de nya son de nya son de ngal twilling bin dan nya twilling bin twilling bin te ju ke mai ge dal ko nyam nya son de ngal twilling bin dan nya twilling bin twilling bin te ju ke dar ke nal ko nyam nya son de nya son de Like that.